thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Who's not?
Here's John Williams.
This is John. How are you? Over the weekend, I put out what I thought was a giant, clever tweet.
Lord have mercy.
And it got like 4 or 5 hearts, so I felt pretty good about that. And maybe 3 comments, so that's my version of blowing up the internet. My tweet was this. Are you ready? If Robert Mueller were Santa Claus and Monday were Christmas, who would you want to see under the tree? And some people were saying things like, well, Paul Manafort or Don Jr. or whatever. But some of you said Hillary, Bill, and Barack, so it didn't go the direction I was thinking it was going to go. But lo and behold, the news today. It seems to me like there are 3 stories, and we will speak in a little more detail about these a little after 2 o'clock. But just so you know that we are paying attention, it seems to me there are 3 stories. Obviously, Paul Manafort and Rick Gates have turned themselves into the FBI. Manafort is charged with 12 counts of conspiracy against the United States, conspiracy to launder money, lying to the FBI, and more. And then this George Papadopoulos, the DePaul grad, the former foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign, has pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. What was his role in all of this? Was he wearing a wire? And will any of these people be leveraged to get higher up the tree? That's the question people have today. But the president wants us to focus more on 2 other stories. One is the sale of uranium mining interests to the Russians, possibly involving millions in contributions to the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons themselves. And the president also wants us to focus more on the funding for that dossier that alleges that the Russians interfered with the election and that the president had a sordid meeting with some Russian prostitutes. It would seem to me like the president would best just stay away from that, but he's actually been highlighting that story, too. Why aren't we talking more about that and the fact that the Clintons and the DNC paid for the research? By the way, that seems to be pretty clear-cut to me. The people that did that research said that whoever paid us for it doesn't compromise its integrity. They are not only standing by their findings and that Steele dossier, but they are standing not only by the findings, but they also say that whoever pays for it doesn't taint it. But I'm not so sure that holds up. If cigarette manufacturers fund research that says anything, say smoking doesn't kill you or cause cancer, you should question the source, right? I think it's the same here, or is it? They say it's not. And by the way, that Fusion GPS is staffed by former Wall Street Journal employees, journalists who know what they're doing, and for hire, they'll dig up the dirt on anybody, Republican or Democrat. So what's the next step? ABC tells us a little after 2 o'clock. Daisy, the dizzy dappled dachshund, Bingo, the hunchback, nearly blind dachshund, Brenda and I were sitting on the sofa, and we were watching some of our favorite shows last night because Sunday night is now the impossible night. At least in my house, there's 4 shows that we want to watch. And I wasn't even thinking about Sunday night football, let alone the World Series. I was watching Stranger Things. I was watching Outlander. I was watching other stuff. I'll bet Sam Panionovich from WGN Radio Sports was watching one of the more bizarre World Series games. Hi, Sam. How are you?
I'm good, John. I'm still waiting to get into Stranger Things. It's on the list.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's fun. It is really fun. It is really fun. And you know how E.T. was fun? This one's also dark, too. Like, horrible.
Ooh.
Horrible. You know, there's sinister government, even more so than an E.T. There's extra natural forces. It's a hoot. Okay, so here's some of the numbers from last night's game. It went 5 hours and 17 minutes. The total number of pitches thrown by a record 14 pitchers was 417. 417 pitches in that game by 14 different pitchers. And for the first time ever in World Series history, 5 different players homered in the game. Did you watch that game last night?
I did see the game, 13-12, too, the final score, 25 runs combined, 28 hits combined, and it's fascinating. These are the two ace pitchers that started, Dallas Keuchel for Houston. He didn't make it out of the fourth inning, and then Clayton Kershaw for the Dodgers. He didn't make it out of the fifth. It had pretty much everything you wanted in a baseball game, lots of offense, some flashy defense, and it's always fun to see the home team win in walk-off fashion. Bottom of the 10th inning, Alex Bregman with a single. Off of one of the best closers in the game. I mean, man, that baseball game had everything you could have wanted and more. I wish it went longer, honestly.
Clayton Kershaw allows 8 home runs now. 8 home runs in the playoffs, which is a Major League Baseball record. That's sort of nice and not nice, isn't it? In order to set the record, you have to be in a lot of games, so you got that going for you. But he's given up 8 dingers in the playoffs this year.
And now the conversation is that the baseballs may be juiced. Now, Major League Baseball continues to deny that, but the rumors are out that, you know, Major League Baseball is trying to keep runs on the incline and that they may be hopping these baseballs up with something. We know we had the juice balls in the 90s, and you had the guys on steroids, like those big mongoloids hitting home runs really far. I don't think they're juiced either, but the conversation, especially after a game like this, when two of the supposed best pitchers in the game are just getting pinged around.
Well, can you be surprised, though? I mean, I get your point, but this was the year we set the record, too, for most home runs. It's not like this didn't come out of the blue. Everybody's hitting home runs this year.
Yeah, certainly the case. And for Kershaw, like you said, that's the knock on Clayton Kershaw. Really awesome regular season pitcher, but in the postseason, you know, the joke is playoff Kershaw. When the moment is at its biggest, Kershaw can't, you know, live up to the hype. And again, couldn't even make it out of the fifth inning. Like you said, 6 runs, another home run. Just a lot of offense here. And now the series goes back to Los Angeles. Astros need one more win to close it out.
Do you think they've done something to the baseballs?
I think they have. Yeah, I think there's something going on now. You know, do I have proof of that? Of course not. But maybe we should do that. We should do a video. Remember the watermelon video you did? I think we should get our hands on a Major League Baseball, and we should just carve that sucker open.
Nice.
And see what's inside.
Nice. Yeah, we did a video which showed me on National Watermelon Day carving up a watermelon into a beautiful display. Maybe we ought to dissect a baseball and make a video of that, see what we see inside there.
There's something going on.
Maybe some of that yellow cake or plutonium or uranium. Maybe there's something nuclear or atomic about these things. That sort of thing. Maybe the Russians are involved. Maybe it's a conspiracy. Maybe the Russians doctored the baseballs to help Trump get elected. What do you think of that?
No comment.
Yeah. 5 hours and 17 minutes. Is that good for baseball?
The grand scheme of things, no, it's not. But if you're at the game, you certainly got your money's worth. I think it was worth it, though, because of all the offense and all the pitching changes. Like you said, I mean, they were just bringing guys in and out. I mean, you look at that Dodgers bullpen. Maeda didn't go an inning. Watson faced 2 hitters. Morrow didn't get anybody out. Cingrani 1 inning. Same thing with the Astros side. A lot of guys coming in facing 1 batter. I mean, everybody gets so, like, chessian in baseball games. Now, you want to bring in the lefty to face the lefty. Then you take the lefty out to put the righty in. And then you double shift and you do all this. And it's starting to get a little ridiculous. But when it's 13-12, it's going to be at least a 4-hour game. So I don't think, you know, I don't think this was a bad game. This is the game to be at for sure when it's 13-12, the final score. But
right.
When the game goes more than 3.5 hours, it's certainly too long.
Well, 3.5, 4 hours, if the score is like 2-3, 2-0 or something like that. But, I mean, you're right. At least something was happening. You know Joe Maddon somewhere was smiling because he's like, yeah, that's what I would have done. I mean, he loves to pull pitchers and move people around, and that was his kind of game. They were running out of guys.
Yeah, they certainly were. But it was a great game. I mean, it ended. What did it end after midnight? It had to have go past midnight.
All I know is as I was getting ready for Betty Bye with my New York Times crossword puzzle, having watched all of our pre-recorded shows, and then I look at my phone and it goes, holy cow, you know, 7-8. I go, wow, because when we walked by, I was going to look at it. We walked by a TV set. Brenda and I were out walking, and we walked by a bar, and we looked inside, and it was 3-0 in the fourth or something. And I kind of figured that's the way it was going to go. You know, an average score, 3-0, 5-2, something like that. So I didn't pay any more attention. And as I'm getting into bed, my phone's going, bing, bing, bing. Holy cow. I didn't get up, though. I didn't want to get up. Okay, let's leave baseball for a second and talk about that Bears game. What was the spread on that game? Because you pick games for us and for this pool you're in Las Vegas. What was the spread on the Bears game?
9.
Oh, so you did cover.
No, I did not cover. I took the Saints.
Oh, I thought you had the Bears in 8.
No, I took the Saints minus 9.
Oh, that's right. You took
3.
Pardon me. You took
the 14-3 at half, and then it was 17-6 with like 4 minutes left, and Trubisky let him down the field. They got a touchdown, and then that was pretty much it. I got backdoored on that one, but I thought the Saints played a much better game. They just made some sloppy mistakes at the end.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You had New Orleans, so we got that one wrong. How did you do with the 5 games you picked?
0-5.
Oh,
yeah.
I hadn't heard from you on the you didn't text me all weekend. I didn't think that was a good sign.
Well, I usually don't. I try to keep it, you know, try to keep it internal. But no, this was, I lost every way possible. I got blown out. I got backdoored. I got hooked. I got just like everything that could have went wrong, went wrong.
I'm so sorry, Sam. You've been doing so well. You've been in the top, you know, 1, 2, 8, 9% nationally in this. This doesn't bode well for you, does it?
Well, I'm not going to do the math yet. I'm just going to sit back and wait. I didn't actually do the percentage. I imagine it's not good. But the leader has 26 points. You get a point for every win. I'm on 19. So, I mean, halfway through the season, it could be a lot worse. But 0-5, I mean, it's tough to go 0-5. I don't even think you would go 0-5.
Right. Actually, I think technically going 0-5 is just as difficult as going 5-0. It's, you know, a flip of a coin. Either your team's going to win or it's going to lose. For you to guess 5 wrong is mathematically, think about this, it is just as difficult to pick 5 losers as it is to pick 5 winners. They should give you something for that.
I agree with that. I went 4-1 twice, 3-1-1, 3-2, a couple of 2-3s in there, but this was the worst one by far, 0-5. So I got to go back to the drawing board and figure it out as we get the second half rolling. Halfway through the season, 8 weeks in, I got 9 more to go, so we'll make it work. We'll get back where we belong.
Sam Panionovich from WGN Sports. Let me pause for a second, Sam. Two other things I just want to talk to you about. One is, are you encouraged by the Bears? You know, I know that nobody wants to try and say a loss is a good thing, but we didn't think that the Bears were going to be that close, right? Did we see something that was encouraging, one? And number two, talk about fun football games. I was disappointed the Chicago Tribune did not give Northwestern better coverage on Sunday after Saturday's three overtime game. That was a hoot. That was a lot of fun. In a minute on WGN, Sam Panionovich, WGN Radio Sports, is on the phone. I had the pleasure of talking to him, Griffin Filipich, and Doma T. Pongo on Saturdays. Sam, we got a question, too, on the sports topic here. You got time for a quick question from one of our listeners?
Of course.
I'm surprised that I didn't ask you this. I'm glad Frank called. Hey, Frank, you're on the air. How are you?
I'm good, King John. I have a question, or a comment, rather. There's been a lot of talk with the large amount of home runs during the regular season and the postseason, but don't you believe if one of the fans that caught one of these home run balls actually cut it open, and I'm not really sure what the definition of are the balls juiced or not, if they're juiced to make them fly further, how much controversy the manufacturers of the baseball would be under and the league? And I know 20 years ago they started to spin and they started to wind the balls tighter so they do fly farther, because when most people go to the ball game, they want to see home runs. If you go to a ball game and the score was 0-1, it's not a very exciting game. But people stand up and scream and cheer when there's a home run and the fireworks go off, and that's what people want to see. But, I mean, I don't know what the true definition of the question, are the balls juiced?
Yeah, how would they be doing that if they were doing it, Sam?
Well, I mean, it was a lot like the cork bat. If the bat is lighter, you know, it's easier to swing faster. So if the ball, if it is wound tighter, it jumps off the bat more. Now, I'm no physicist by any means, but I look at the numbers here, Frank, and there were over 5,800 home runs this year, which is a massive number. It broke the record for most homers.
And they talk about launch velocity, too. I mean, on home runs, but sometimes just line drives. MLB is very interested in the speed and trajectory of baseballs. They are selling the hits now.
They call that exit velocity. Like how fast did the ball leave the bat? I also think, both John and Frank, that players are just bigger and stronger than they've ever been. I mean, you look at a guy like Aaron Judge.
I agree.
Aaron Judge is huge. I mean, he's like 6'7", 270 pounds. It's like he's hitting wiffle balls sometimes. Now, I also think, too, you know, power is what drives the game now. And there are more strikeouts than ever, too. I mean, the strikeouts are up there with the home runs as well. It's never been sexier to hit a home run. So if a guy goes up there, strikes out three times, hits a home run, in his eyes, that's a good game.
You see the home run. Thank you for the call, Frank. That's interesting. If somebody wanted to, just give up one of those home runs and, compare the tension or the strings to old baseballs. Did you see what happened? So an L.A. Dodger hits a home run. The Astro fan catches it, and they're so thrilled. And the guy standing next to him takes the ball, and like we do at Wrigley Field, he's like, "No way, this sucks, man." And he throws the ball back onto the field. And the guy that caught it, he's like, "What did you just do? I just caught a home run in the World Series." And the guy that threw it back was like, "No, we can't keep that ball." I'm reading their body language, but you saw what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I saw it. I think throwing a home run back is stupid no matter where it's at. If you get the home run, you should keep it, right? I mean, if you win the lottery, do you throw the ticket? I know it's a little different, but I mean, how often are you going to catch a home run in a baseball game? You're going to throw it back?
And one of the great World Series games of all time. I'm surprised that guy didn't deck him. I would have punched him right. I would have had my brother punch him or my son punch him, but I'm not a very good puncher. But I would have had somebody punch that guy in the nose. I would have subcontracted
it. I didn't like you to condone violence. I didn't know you were floating that way. That's pretty cool.
What do you think that baseball was worth?
Oh, a couple hundred bucks.
That's all?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Should Bears fans be encouraged by what happened over the weekend?
I feel like we have this conversation all the time. They should be encouraged by the defense. Now, you still have to win football games. I mean, you're 3-5 through 8 games. I like the progression still of Mitch Trubisky. The numbers, not that great. 14 of 32, only a .164. He did throw a pick at the end of the game. It was really bad. That sealed the game for New Orleans. But I like the way the defense continues to play.
Man.
I think they're a top 10 defense in the league. And I do like that Trubisky is seeing more and more defenses. He's growing on the fly. And the Saints were throwing the kitchen sink at him. They were blitzing from every angle, every different position. I thought he picked them up pretty well. He's getting better at reading defenses. But, again, this is a rebuilding team. Remember that. Try and find the positives. And in the negatives, look at how this team can get better from said negative. So I'm okay with it. It's tough to win in New Orleans, and now they hit the bye. They've got a couple weeks off, and they can hang out and watch some film.
And get ready for the Packers. One last thing, then give me 30 seconds on the Northwestern game. How much fun was that?
Yeah, I was super pumped for Dave Ennett, who's now got to call 2 overtime wins in a row, both of them, I believe, in 3 overtimes, 39-31. You got to go back and hear the audio of Dave going, "And the Cats win!" super exciting, and now the Cats 5-3 in the Big Ten.
I love they went for 2 on that after the touchdown, right? They went for 2.
Well, you got to go for 2 in the third overtime.
Oh, you do?
You've got to go for 2, yeah.
Yep. I didn't know that. Yeah, I guess that does add another element of difficulty. Maybe somebody will score but not get the conversion, huh?
Correct.
All right. Hey, nice to talk to you, Sam. I'll visit with you on Saturday, if not sooner.
You got it. Take care.
Sam Panionovich, WGN Radio Sports. Not just one amazing travel story, but a few. Stephanie Menendez was in Reykjavik. Tabitha Green was in Budapest. Lou Manfredini just got back from his listener trip to Spain. Marshall Lyles was in Las Vegas and saw some amazing things. And Brett Harrington from our staff just got back from Vegas, too. Separate trip. But it's just like, holy cow, you guys. So everybody's buzzing, going, "Oh, well, blah, 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 blah." So I said, "Okay, Stephanie, I got 60 seconds for you. Are you ready?"
I am, yes.
Stephanie Menendez, operations manager, just back from Reykjavik. What was the highlight of your trip?
I love the Blue Lagoon. It's a geothermal spa right outside of Reykjavik, and it was such a relaxing, amazing experience. I can't recommend it enough.
So is that one of those outdoor thermal pools that you just wade into?
Right. So it's a geothermal spa, and the water is this beautiful light blue color, and it's like that because of the way the silica in the water reflects off the sunlight. So you can't see through it, and it's just gorgeous, and it's warm and lovely because it's 40 degrees outside, but in the water it's 100 degrees.
I travel a little, and everybody says you got to go to Iceland, you got to go to Iceland. It's just kind of raw, natural beauty, right? Is it, though? But there's not cool towns, right?
Oh, No, it's absolutely wonderful. I've been twice in 6 months, John. I went with my little girls and my mother back in April, and then this time I went on a girlfriend trip for the weekend.
Wow. And how's the food? I don't imagine the food in Iceland is that good.
You know, I really had an amazing hot dog in Iceland.
Not a Chicago, an Iceland dog?
It was an Iceland dog. They had this like light brown sauce that I didn't get with it. I was kind of boring. I got it plain, but it was a delicious hot dog.
All right, so two trips for Stephanie to Reykjavik. Reykjavik?
I say Reykjavik.
Reykjavik.
I think it's a tomato kind of thing, John. I don't think there's a wrong way for us to pronounce it.
The thermal pool was the highlight. Cool. Hey, Steph, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Thanks, John. See you soon. Bye.
That's our Stephanie Menendez. Tabitha Green is our Director of Marketing and Digital Innovation. It's not can you top this, Tabitha, but can you top that, Tabitha?
I don't know. She had a pretty awesome trip.
Well, you were in Budapest, and by the way, do we say Budapest or Budapest?
Budapest.
Kind of what I thought. So,
at least that's what the locals have said.
Do you stay in a hotel or did you do a river cruise?
We actually did an Airbnb, which was amazing. We stayed in this amazing, probably 2,000 square foot apartment, super reasonable in price. That was just beautifully done.
Yeah, how much? I was just thinking, what's a 3-bedroom Airbnb for a week in Budapest cost?
Yeah, you are going to be shocked, but it was about $200 a night, and there were 3 bedrooms, 3 baths, 3.5 baths, actually,
wow.
And it was large.
So, you know, after the airfare, you're pretty much set. Then you can cook in or do whatever you want, huh?
Yeah, here's the best thing about Budapest is that everything is so affordable. They're not on the euro, although you can pay in euros. They're not on the euro, and you can buy beer or wine for less than $2. So you can eat and drink at a reasonable price. You can stay at a reasonable price. And a lot of the things that you can see there are actually pretty reasonable as well.
We were there a year ago and loved the town and the market squares and shops and that sort of thing. And yeah, some of the street food is fantastic.
Yeah.
So what was the highlight for you?
The highlight for me, and this is really how I judge my vacations, is by the food. I did not have a bad meal the entire time that we were there. And the one thing that I did fall in love with was the Hungarian goulash. I think I ordered it for every single meal.
So that's just like a stew, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because the way that the Hungarians do it, it's more of a soup. So it's, you know, your typical stew with beef, stew meat, potatoes, carrots, and onions. But you know what I think the secret is the Hungarian paprika that they use. So we definitely brought back a whole bunch of it.
Everybody's selling the paprika, or do you say paprika? The people are nice too, right?
Yes. I think, I think people have a very different opinion when they hear Budapest, but everyone was super nice. I was told that a lot of people didn't speak English and was pleasantly surprised that everybody that we encountered spoke English.
Tabitha Green is our Director of Marketing and Digital Innovation here at WGN. Welcome back, Tabitha. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
Marsha Lyles, who helps me do the bright side on Fridays, reading the texts as they poured in, is one of our sales assistants here. Hi, Marsha. How are you?
Hi, John.
So where were you?
I actually went over to Vegas last Friday, so that was my bright side, actually.
Yeah, you couldn't do that for us, so you just got back. Did you get back last night?
I just got back last night.
What was, I hate to say this, but did you see Mandalay Bay?
I did.
What happens over there now?
You know, it's pretty secure over there now. They have police almost at every elevator.
But the hotel is up and running.
It's up and running, yeah.
Did you stay there?
I did not. I was at the Luxor next door.
Yeah.
But it is up and running, and they're just tight with security right now.
You see more of a presence, a police presence?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because you go there now and again. This is more than you've seen in the past, right?
Absolutely. It was only at that particular hotel.
What was the show? Did you go for a show? Did you go for somebody? What was the big draw?
Oh, I went to go check out Jay-Z 444 tour.
How was the show?
It was wonderful.
You told me that he was a little late getting there.
He was 3 hours late.
Is that his deal? Because some of these artists are like that. Is he like that? Is he notoriously late?
Well, you know what? One person, Tabitha, actually told me he's done that in the past.
Shows up late for his show. So what do you do? Just sitting around, waiting?
Sitting around, waiting, drinking.
Yeah. Did you play the games?
Yeah, I did play some of the games.
And did you come out ahead?
They played me.
That answers that question. So, but Vegas is still fun.
It's still fun. A huge crowd.
Because you see the commercials on TV now, Vegas strong. And, you know, they're sort of saying, come back to Las Vegas, come back to Las Vegas.
And it's still strong as ever.
Yeah. Good crowds, or was they down a little bit from when you've seen them in the past?
It's still up.
The highlight of
especially
the trip?
Especially for the Halloween, during this time of the year, there's a lot of people there. With costumes.
Partying. What was the highlight of the trip for you?
The highlight for me, I would say, is going to the concert. I got to rest a lot.
Yeah, no
I didn't want to come back needing a vacation from my
Where's resort. Your part? We partied. It was crazy.
No,
you were chilling.
I was chilling. I only partied one night.
One of your colleagues, well, all of us are colleagues here. Brett Harrington is our digital sales coordinator at WGN. You were in Vegas over the weekend too, right?
I was, John.
Yeah, but you didn't go with Marcia.
Separate trips.
You went there for why?
So I actually went for an early 30th birthday present to myself.
Nice.
I went with two of my best friends, and we actually went to see Britney, which was awesome.
Not Britney Spears, Britney.
Yes, Britney.
You're on a first name basis.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I think her super fans are that way.
Yeah.
It's Britney.
You know, it's like the Madonna of our generation, you know?
So you followed her, you've loved her, you've forgiven her, everything.
Oh, yeah.
Always been there
for fan.
Her. No kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what was the highlight of your trip?
Meeting her. I actually got to do a backstage tour with her assistant.
How did you manage that?
Actually, one of my friends, Allie, actually scored me the backstage opportunity. It was awesome.
Do you pay extra for that, or is that something they draw? How do you get that?
Well, the tour was actually because she actually knew someone who worked for the show, so that was free. But then, obviously, the backstage, like the meet and greet portion, I actually had to pay for, but it was a gift to myself.
Do you care to share with us what the whole kit and caboodle cost you then? Don't have to.
Sure, why not? So the actual meet and greet portion, not including the ticket, was $1,500. And that's insane, but whatever.
Hey, this is your life. It's your money.
It is.
Do you have a wife and kids?
I do not.
Do you have a mortgage and an insane car payment?
I do not.
Then you get to do whatever you want.
YOLO, right?
So are you? Did it? Was it worth it to you?
You know, it was. She was very, very shy. So, you know, when you see her on stage...
Well,
you know,
she's getting to meet Brett. I mean, of course she's going to be a little taken aback.
I'm intimidating. So, I don't know. It was great. I loved it. She was just very shy. So opposite of how she was on stage.
Right. She wasn't... Is her show very sexy still?
Yeah. Very, envelope pushing.
Really?
High energy.
What do you mean by envelope pushing?
Just, you know, a little... risque, if you will.
Sure. And how long was the meet and greet backstage?
I'd say a good five minutes or so, give or take.
So you got to visit with her for about 5 minutes.
Yeah. You know, met her team, met her manager, got to go backstage, see all the wardrobe. It was really cool. I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. $1,500 for that.
Yeah.
And then how much for the show itself?
Like $250.
Yeah. Good seats, though. Huh?
Yeah. I was first row.
Oh, nice.
It was awesome.
So you've got your Britney ticket punched now.
Yes. Bucket list. Check.
What else is on that list?
Just travel more. Yeah. Honestly, I don't travel a ton. So this trip was kind of eye-opening in that aspect.
You know, I do these cruises with listeners, like Lou Manfredini just got back from Spain. I thought Lou would be able to join us in this segment, but Lou will get his chance. He obviously was talking about it this past Saturday. But I should do that. I should say, hey, WGN listeners, I'm going on a Kelly Cruise in April. Brent and I visit kellycruises.com right now and sign up for our trip. But if you want to spend 5 minutes with Brenda and I inside our suite, you have to pay extra. Marcia, what do you think that should go for?
Oh, I'd say at least $2,000.
$2,000.
Yeah, maybe three.
Yeah, I'd say two or three, and that would be grand, but I don't think $2,000 would wash. Lou is on line 7. Okay, so Mr. Manfredini back from Spain. I know both of you got stuff to do. Feel free to hang out or go back to your fascinating and important work that you do here. But welcome back, Brett. Nice to see you.
Thank you so much, John.
Marcia, I'll talk to you on Friday, right?
We'll see you on Friday.
Welcome back.
I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know when I'll be.
Hi, Lou Manfredini.
Hi, John.
It's our Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini, who you heard Saturday and Saturdays on GN, but We're a little nervous because if you'd run into any problems with your Friday flight back from Spain, you would have missed your gig Saturday, but all went okay, huh?
It was great. It was really, I was...
in Spain.
Super impressed. Spain is a wonderful country. I was really intrigued by the fact that the Muslim and Arabic influence in the country of Spain was so prominent, and it was really a wonderful trip with many WGN listeners, and we had just a great time.
That's funny because you think of that as a West European nation, so, you know, Catholic or something. I didn't anticipate that you would come back and say you were interested to see the Arabic and Muslim influences.
For two centuries, the Muslims, the Jews, and the Catholics existed in harmony. And then when the Crusades happened, they just kicked everybody out, which I'm like, no wonder they're so angry. But, I mean, the influence of the mosques and the that were built by the sultans and the influence of the Arabic language on Spanish itself was really quite fascinating. Mm. And I just learned a whole bunch of stuff, along with, you know, eating lots of ham and drinking Spanish wine and beer. So
well, I was listening to your show on Saturday, of course, and there you were going, holy Toledo, that's not from Ohio. That's from Toledo, Spain.
It is not. Right. There's a beautiful town called Toledo, where I also found out that they filmed a bunch of episodes of Game of Thrones there.
Huh.
And they even make the swords there. They have these blacksmith shops where they make the swords. But in that one geographic town, there were over 100 churches and houses of worship all jammed into this beautiful little city that's in the hills. And thus, they said, the term Holy Toledo, or as we say, Toledo, comes from there.
Do you get this impression? Because Brent and I have traveled over to Europe, just, you know, wherever there's water. I mean, we've done some inland trips, but we do a lot of cruises. And you visit these old European towns, and you're so impressed with the magnificence of their cathedrals and big churches, and then some of the towns that just have them scattered everywhere. But you also think, you know, guys, if we had been working on a polio vaccine instead of building houses of worship, we might have been better off. Did you ever get that feeling that their immersion in religion was almost working against them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you look at some of the architecture and what it took, I mean, there was a cathedral that we went through that took 500 years to build.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you think of the masses of people that, you know, designed it and built it, and generation upon generation never saw it finished.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, imagine what they could have accomplished in that 500 years.
It was the highlight of the trip for you, Lou?
You know, it was, we went to a part of Spain called the Alhambra, which is this, the best way to describe it would be this Middle Ages botanic gardens. But also within this area were all these castles and fortresses that were built by the sultans to protect the area of Spain. And the history that was there, and then when the Catholics came through and then kind of made it their own, but then preserved some of it. Some of these homes that the sultans lived in were these very nondescript towers. And then you went inside and there was all this ornate etching and just this absolutely exquisite beauty on something that you wouldn't see until you went inside, which evidently is, you know, part of the whole theme of being a Muslim, is that the beauty's on the inside, not the outside. So it was fascinating.
As are you, sir. Welcome back. Nice to hear you on the radio, and I'll bump into you soon.
You got it. See you, Jen.
That's our Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini. Everybody was just buzzing about their trip. So there was our little tour of Reykjavik, Budapest, Spain, Las Vegas, and Brittany.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well,
here's John Williams.
Don't want to brag, but by my count, we're up to four today. It's 208. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Appreciate you tuning in. We had some blue skies, now some dark clouds rolling in, and then some blue skies and sunshine. It's a potpourri overhead in downtown Chicago. We're in the Allstate Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue. You know, a story that would be getting a lot of attention today would be not only the Weinstein story and the fallout from that, but the Kevin Spacey story, which is really weird. And we'll actually touch on how that story's been covered a little after 2:30. But I want to take some time right now just to talk about the big story today, and that is what's been going on with this roundup of Paul Manafort and Rick Gates. They have turned themselves in. And George Papadopoulos, a foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign, has pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI. The Papadopoulos story may be the biggest or maybe most critical of those three, but the biggest name is obviously Paul Manafort. Now, to be fair, the president wants us to focus more on two other stories, the sale of uranium mining interests to the Russians and how that may have enriched the Clintons. The president is also very interested in our attention to the dossier story, alleging Russian interference with the election and that sordid meeting that the president may have had with some Russian prostitutes. The president wants us to realize that the Clinton campaign paid for that. Why aren't we investigating that more? I've found a lot on those two stories, just Googling Washington Post, New York Times, and CNN and ABC, for that matter. But on a phone line right now, I want to go back to the Paul Manafort story with Brad Garrett, the crime and terrorism analyst for ABC News, who joins us from the nation's capital. Brad, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Good day to you, John.
Am I missing any other stories, or are those three enough for right now?
I think that'll keep us busy for a little while.
Did everybody know, because over the weekend, while we'd heard that there was going to be some arrests maybe made today, we didn't have the names. Was it a well-kept secret that it was going to be Manafort and maybe Gates?
Yes. You know, Bob Mueller is really good about staying extremely low-key, hiring people that don't talk. And so, you know, I think there was some belief, obviously, that Manafort may well have been up today, but nothing until we actually learned about it this morning.
I wondered if Kushner was going to be in that roundup as well. He's conveniently out of country this week, huh?
Yes, it would appear. And, you know, these things are like building blocks. You sort of start wherever you can start in the pyramid and try to work your way to the top, if, in fact, you can get to the top. So these are logical people to charge to see what they're willing to tell you to further the Russian side of this investigation.
By the way, as you speak, Manafort's attorney has just stepped up to some microphones.
Regarding a FARA filing, the United States government has only used that offense six times since 1966 and only resulted in one conviction. The second thing about this indictment that I myself find most ridiculous is a claim that maintaining offshore accounts to bring all your funds into the United States as a scheme to conceal from the United States government is ridiculous.
This is Paul Manafort's attorney, Kevin Downing.
What did the White House think about what he ever said? Did the White House worry?
Sounds like he's stepping away from the microphone now. But there he was sort of casting aspersions, Brad, on the charges against his client. Brad, are you still there?
Oh, I am. Yeah. I am. She interrupted me, and I didn't hear what you asked me.
Fair enough. No, that's quite all right. So there he is just saying that these charges are, you know, he's trying to diminish the charges against his client. That's what you pay good money for an attorney for.
Well, exactly. I mean, you have to look at this from a couple of big pictures in my perspective. One is that there is there are rules, regulations, laws that require any of us who represent or work for a foreign government to tell the U.S. government, you know, for the obvious reasons. They're alleging he didn't do that, or if he did it, he did it recently, and that monies that he obtained from, which apparently was several million dollars, yeah, for working for the president or soon to be, at that point, president of Ukraine, several million dollars, that money, was not reported. The taxes weren't paid on it. They were, I guess, placed in an offshore account, brought into the U.S. Without taxes ever being paid on it. So that's the other side. I think the last peg is that I think they allege that Manafort and Gates actually invested money for the Ukrainian president in the U.S. and didn't tell anybody.
Boy, that'll be, if he goes down for this, I mean, you look at the indictment, and it's many pages, and there they have the evidence against him. And they show all of the work that he has had done around his house and his real estate holdings and his cars and his clothes. This guy was spending tens of thousands of dollars a month for years on clothes. And rather than him paying for it, it was being funded directly by somebody in Cyprus. I mean, this guy has had landscaping and a kitchen remodel done, and the payment was coming not from him, but from these interests overseas. And whatever that is, you are not paying taxes then on that income you're receiving, because they're directly paying the contractors. So what a shame it would be. What a stupid way to go down, that your landscaping ends up putting you in jail, or maybe damaging the current presidency, because you are trying to avoid paying taxes on that income.
You know, you can be the smartest person in the room and make a lot of money. And I see it every day. You do, too. And they make some of the dumbest decisions. So if, in fact, that's the decision he made, he's got big issues.
Well, so he's 68 years old, right?
Correct.
So he doesn't. I wonder if he were found guilty on these charges, how long does Manafort go to jail?
Well, typically people don't go to jail for long periods of time for failing to register, et cetera, as a foreign agent. But, you know, you have all of those money laundering counts. And my guess is even a judge will take a dim view on, you know, I think they said in the indictment $75 million. I don't know. I mean, I think if he would go to trial, get convicted of a majority of those counts, that he would go to jail. Now, can he plea bargain his way out of a lot of that? Probably would be my guess, but he's really going to have to sort of lay bare what he knows about Russians and the election and the campaign in the fall.
Do we know what that would be?
I don't know, but, you know, logic would dictate, why would you hire him? You know, he's a smart guy and obviously knows a lot about politics, but setting that aside, why would you hire him right when you did? It certainly makes your head scratch about, he would be a logical person to go to help you connect with the Russians, because he has such deep hooks there. So, you know, I don't think that's escaping anybody.
Okay, so maybe he's got some then information about Russian collusion with the Trump campaign, and Mueller's going to try and leverage a sentence or fine against him to get that information, right?
Correct. I mean, that's just how this game is played.
So I wonder what his threshold for pain is, right? Do we have any sense of how allied he is to the president? Will he turn?
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you tell somebody they're going to get you know, a lot of years in prison,
and they're 68.
And they're 68 years old, I mean, some people, you know, that's just, they're going to turn. Well, at some point.
But all of this assumes that, in fact, he has information to share. Maybe, you know, maybe there's nothing there. Either the Trump campaign, in fact, never colluded, or that Manafort is unaware of that. In that case, he doesn't have anything to offer.
Correct. And is that possible? Sure it is. Do I think that's likely? No. But we'll see. We'll see at the end of the day. But, you know, actually that could work to his disadvantage if he doesn't know anything, because then what does he have to bargain?
Yeah, right.
So my guess is that they wouldn't have gone to all the trouble. This is a fairly lengthy, multi-month investigation if, in fact, they just wanted to charge him with money laundering and working with a foreign government. But we'll see.
What do you know about or make of this Poppin' Fresh guy?
Yeah, Papadopoulos.
Yeah.
Papadopoulos, I think, you know, was hired as a foreign policy guy and apparently worked in that arena and, you know, connected with the Russians, apparently had meetings with either Russian officials and or an intermediary they refer to in the indictment as the professor. He may potentially know more about the TikTok of what went on between the Trump campaign and the Russians So we'll see. But keep in mind, it would appear that they've sort of had him on ice for a period of time, and we're just now learning about it. So who knows what he has already told them.
Yeah, right. Does any of this go to the dossier and all of that? Or I was watching somebody today say, you know, at the end of the day, what this is on its face is, you know, it's a money laundering scheme. It's the sort of crimes that have been prosecuted before, but it doesn't necessarily tie Trump in on its face.
No, you're exactly right. If you just look at the indictment, this is all about alleged bad behavior by Manafort and Gates.
Yeah, to enrich themselves. And then, and by the way, a lot of pages are spent in the indictment itself just talking about the amount of money he was spending and where it was coming from. I mentioned this when you were first coming on. Between 2008 and 2012, Manafort spent $520,000 at one clothing store in Beverly Hills. He also spent $840,000 at a clothing store in New York between 2008 and 2014. So by one account, it's $90,000 a year. And at the other store, $13,000 a year. So that's $103,000 a year, or about $10,000 a month at two stores he was spending on clothes in a decade. And that was just the clothing purchases.
Right.
Golly.
I think high roller might certainly fit his definition of him.
Yeah, right. But I want to go back to the Papadopoulos angle maybe in just the way this is rolling out. Do you, Brad, think that there are other names, and will they be names that we recognize that Mueller will indict or who he will arrest? Answer that for me in just a minute. WGN Radio, Brad Garrett is the crime and terrorism analyst for ABC News in Washington. He's answering some questions for us about Paul Manafort and, for that matter, George Papadopoulos and Gates. Rick Gates, George Papadopoulos, and Paul Manafort. Will there be other names, Brad, and will we recognize them? Because Papadopoulos and Gates aren't household names. Manafort sort of is. I wonder who else is on the menu that's going to be served.
Oh, I certainly think that there'll be other people that we both have heard of and maybe not so much heard of. But, you know, these things sort of have their own head of steam. And, you know, these are the first public things out of the gate, the three of them. And we'll see. But I suspect that they are further down the road with other individuals that, if in fact they've got enough to indict them, they will do that. Because again, the key is to climb the pyramid, and the only way you can climb it is to get people to talk to you who have inside information.
So, how nervous do you think the White House is?
Well, I don't know. I guess if I were certain individuals in the White House, I might be nervous. But it's hard to say because that's a difficult place to read because, you know, it's logic is not their strong suit.
Yeah, and I'll add honesty, too. I mean, maybe they're telling the truth about this one, but since they have a history of not being forthright about things, it's really hard. I mean, you would expect them to be defensive, but too bad for them if this time the defense is the truth because they don't have a lot of credibility in that regard.
Right, and so the bottom line will be, can they get almost up to the top of the pyramid where the president is, but not make it to the top? And the answer is that's also quite possible.
But is that Mueller's aim? I mean, so what is he really trying to do here? His job is not to indict the president. His job is to find out if the Russians affected the election. Is that right?
Well, exactly. And I will guarantee you that's what he's doing. I mean, I don't think the president's not the goal. If it gets to the president, then so be it. But yes, his job was to try to uncover the Russian connection to the elections. But having do that, as he does that, obviously, the players that he crosses, many of them are very close to the president or in fact, work for him.
And so it's a good thing, I guess, then, that the special prosecutor has such broad powers, right? The president
right.
has hinted that he doesn't like that or this, and there's been some speculation that he might try and fire him. What are you hearing about that?
I'm not hearing anything, but we'll see. You know, because these indictments, you know, really focus, as you and I have talked for a few minutes, you know, basically on alleged bad behavior by Gates and Manafort, you know, it sort of takes it away. Well, okay, they found that they were doing bad things, then maybe they should get prosecuted. I think the rubber will sort of meet the road if, in fact, somebody comes out that actually says that there is a connection and here it is.
It just be, you know, I don't mean to get, you know, too intrigued by the dominoes here, but I am. And that is that suppose Manafort had this deal going on with people in Cyprus and they were giving him money and they were paying for his landscaping. $250,000 evidently they funneled to car dealers so that he could buy Range Rovers. I mean, just stuff like that. Sloppy accounting on his part because he didn't want to pay taxes or he wanted to hide the money. Suppose then that gives them Manafort. And then Manafort, not wanting to spend the rest of his life in jail or 10 minutes in jail for Donald Trump, then dishes on Donald Trump. And so then Trump or other people closer to him go down because of some guy, Manafort, who was sloppy with his money. Isn't that an interesting series of circumstances with other dominoes in between? I'm reminded a little of Ken Starr, the special prosecutor for President Clinton. He didn't set out to find Monica Lewinsky, and that was ultimately Clinton's undoing. They were investigating Whitewater, a real estate deal, but look what they turned up.
Exactly. And again, it's the same mindset here of let's just see where this takes us. And I think that's where they are. And, you know, as they look at the other people that maybe they're about to indict, they're going to see, okay, this person A, person B, person C, we believe they know the following. Let's see if they actually do. They get charged. They get brought in. And, you know, the same sort of approach, which is if you want a deal out of this, you need to talk to us about what you know. And, you know, the key for investigators, I will tell you, is for them to know absolutely as much as possible before they walk in the room. So, for example, with Manafort, do they know specific pieces of information through their own wiretaps,
right,
interviews, whatever right. it might be, when Manafort says, well, you know, I don't know anything about A and B, so you throw a tape down and go, well, who is that on that tape? You know, that kind of thing that sort of gets to people to, you know, come around like, well, they may have me here.
Respond to this, and then I've got to go, and I know you do too. Hey, John, you're forgetting one aspect of all of this. Could be he could be convicted of all charges and Trump would let him go. Can you comment on that?
Sure. I mean, he can pardon him, supposedly. You can't pardon people if it involves allegations or evidence of obstruction of justice, i.e. by Trump or Trump associates. But yes, I mean, he could pardon him. But, you know, that becomes a slippery slope as to each time somebody gets indicted, the president, you know, basically dismisses it. So I don't know. We'll see. But clearly, to answer your question, he could do that.
But if the president pardons you, then you can't go to jail. Then you can't claim the Fifth because there's no way you can incriminate yourself. You're immune to jail. So then they would be able to insist that you testify if the president has pardoned you in advance, right?
Well, no, because now there's no charges. Why would you talk to anybody if the charges weren't there? If the hammer is not there, I can't imagine anybody, particularly this level of people we're talking about, having any conversation, because what do they have to gain? Now you can't send me to jail. Now you can't do anything. Okay, you fine me or make me pay taxes. Okay, I'll do that. But that's all sort of regulatory stuff. That's not criminal stuff.
Brad Garrett, crime terrorism analyst for ABC News. Let's talk again, Brad. I sure appreciate your time this afternoon.
Anytime. Take care.
It's 2:30. Lots of texts about this, and we'll continue to follow the story today. You know, Roe is raring to go after 3 on WGN. Thank you, Kim. It's 2:38. Little Arcade Fire for you today. In the past, comments of cigarette ash. At the United Center this evening. Won't be the first ones. Producer Ellip's Arcade Fire fan. And I think she's a little sad because she's not going to be able to go to the show. Looking for signs of life. Looking for signs every night, but there's no signs of life. So we do it again. I know of Arcade Fire. I've listened to some of their music over the years. I didn't know they were big enough to do a show at the United Center. I thought they'd be at one of the smaller venues in town. They're a big deal, huh, Ella?
Yeah, I've seen them twice now. The first time I saw them was at the United Center, and then the second time was at Lollapalooza this summer.
Oh, yeah, how'd they do at Lolla?
Amazing.
Yeah.
So good. They're a spectacle on stage.
Why do you say that?
Because they're lighting, they dance, they run through the crowd.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think his name, Win Butler is the vocalist, the front man's name, and Will Butler is his brother. And he ran through the crowd with a drum, holding the drum.
Yeah, playing.
Right past me. It was so cool.
That was your moment. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I didn't get my phone out, though, because if I had, I would have missed the moment. You know,
Marcia was in our studio at the beginning of the show. It turns out that several members of the staff were on really fun, amazing trips in the last week, and many of them returned over the weekend. So, like Iceland, Reykjavik, Iceland. Stephanie was in Reykjavik, mm-hmm. and Tabitha was in Budapest. Lou Manfredini just got back from Spain, and then a couple of our staff members, Brett and Marcia, just got back from Las Vegas. So Marcia had a brush with fame the other day, but it was here in Chicago. She was at the Walgreens, and who is like sort of sitting on the radiator or the windowsill on the side? It's Joe Jackson, Michael and Janet's dad. Joe Jackson is sitting there. You haven't seen Mr. Jackson in a while, have you? But when you see him, you go, wow, I kind of recognize that face. It's an older, frailer, thinner version of himself with a fabulous coat, jewelry, and hat. And they were doing some shopping there at the Walgreens.
So can I just actually...
Got a picture.
Can I correct you?
What? I always tell my stories with 100% accuracy.
Well, I thought the funniest detail was that they were at TJ Maxx.
Oh, that's right. It wasn't Walgreens. Well, I don't know how much money does Mr. Jackson have, Senior?
I don't know.
I mean, you know, that I don't know that any of the kids, I don't know what their relationship is like, but it seems to me like if I were the kids and I was still making money, I don't know that I would be spending some off to the old man over
right.
there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but maybe he's still tied in with them. Or maybe not. He was at TJ Maxx. You know, that's the other thing about this Paul Manafort thing. So the indictment against him says, okay, here is where the money was coming from, because a lot of this is sort of money laundering type crimes that they're charging him with. So they have how he was spending money and then where the money came from. And if you get somebody in the Ukraine, if you get somebody in Cyprus to pay for your clothes and your car and your landscaping, but you don't claim that as income and pay taxes on it, then you've committed a crime. What a stupid way to go to jail. If you can get $12 million for doing whatever, go ahead and pay $4 million in taxes. You will then have $8 million. Wow! But no, he didn't do that. This is the charge. Maybe he's squeaky clean and this is all wrong. But you look at the indictment, and here was his spending. Between 2008 and 2012, Paul Manafort spent $520,000 at a clothing store in Beverly Hills. He spent $840,000 at another store in about the same time period in New York. So $13,000, so about $100,000 a year on clothes. Or another way to look at it is about $10,000 a month, because that was just at two stores alone. $10,000 a month. And somebody texted and said, hey, I work at a high-end retailer in town, and it is not unusual for people to spend that kind of money. I don't understand how people do that. If I had to spend $10,000 a month on clothes and then wear them, it would seem to me like that would be all you could do. How, like, my son's getting married in a couple of weeks. It's a big deal for my family, and I bought a new pair of shoes for the rehearsal dinner. It took me a while to do that. And that was just one pair of shoes. Imagine if you had to spend $10,000 on clothes every month, all of the time, for years. How would you... My lawn would be a mess. We wouldn't have made the bed because they well, why didn't you make the bed? I said, because I had to go to the mall and buy $10,000 worth of clothes again. And then you've got all of these clothes. Where are you going to put them? And then say you have $100,000 worth of clothes that you bought this year. And you go into your closet. What do you say? I don't have anything. No, you have $100,000 worth of clothes that are new. So then you have to start wearing them. Or you could just buy more clothes. I don't think he's a well person. How could anybody want or physically need that much in clothes? And that's just the clothing spending. And then they say, well, you were sure busy buying clothes. Oh, no, I was even busier. Why? Because I spent millions on landscaping and getting the kitchens redone on the houses that I bought. And by I bought, I mean you paid for, that I didn't pay taxes on. Say, really? Because if you bought a car, that's a weeks-long process. you go to various dealers, and which one do you want to get, and what's the best deal you're going to get, and do you want the moonroof or not? So buying a car or a Land Rover, a Range Rover, is work. But there he was buying Range Rovers left and right between 2008 and 2012. And then he got a Mercedes-Benz to boot in 2012, and that cost him $62,000, which really, Paul, a $60,000 Mercedes? What's that, the kid's car? I mean, seriously, that's the best you can do? And then he was buying art. It would seem to me like when you're buying art, that would require some time and thought and energy. Manafort spent $934,350 at an antique rug store in Alexandria, Virginia, between 2008 and 2010. In 2 years, he spent $1 million on rugs. Now that's a good day for a rug store. Here comes Mr. Manafort. Yeehaw! We're going to have the best Christmas party ever.
On a rug?
To be fair, I have spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars on very nice rugs. If you get those Persian rugs with the really intricate weaves and colors, you can spend thousands on those. But can you spend $1 million on those?
No.
In 2 years? Well, you have a small place. What if you had... Your apartment is not that big.
This isn't personal.
It kind of is. I think that's part of my repulsion, or maybe yours too, at that. It's not just the excess, or maybe the crime. It's that it's just so much more than we've got. You and I don't have that kind of money, space, or even time to spend that kind of money. He spent $623,000 at an art dealer in New York between 2010 and 2013. This guy was just plowing through the money. And maybe that was it. You know, you've got all of this money coming in. You say, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I know. Rather than put it in an account and make it look suspicious, I'll spend it. No one's going to say, wow, that's awful nice landscaping. I'll bet you're in cahoots with Ukraine. No, you've just got really nice landscaping. So maybe that's what these people do. I don't know. And lastly, he bought two properties in New York in the same time, around 2012, one for $1.5 million, another for $3 million. Then he dropped $2 million on a home in Alexandria, Virginia, plus the clothes. And then some other stuff. He paid a cut. I'll stop. I guess, again, I just don't have the time. How do you have the time? Like, if I was in the middle of that sort of multi-year shopping spree, if you saw me, I would not have shaved. And you would say, gee, John, I thought you were doing pretty well. Why don't you shave? And I would say, because I had to spend $10,000 at Nordstrom's. That's why. Nordstrom. It's $247. The Kevin Spacey story broke amidst the all of this weekend. The Kevin Spacey story. Actor Kevin Spacey has said that he has loved and had romantic encounters with men and that he chooses now to live as a gay man. That has come out at the same time that he has apologized to Anthony Rapp. Rapp, the movie star and stage star, has said that when he was 14 years old, Spacey made a sexual advance on him, and it has troubled him ever since. Jason Nathanson covers the entertainment beat for ABC, and he joins us on WGN. Hi, Jason. It's John. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Tell me what's most interesting to you about that story today.
Well, the fact that Netflix is now saying House of Cards is being canceled after the next season, which will be season 6, which they were just in production on. We're getting reports of that from everywhere. They're not saying, you know, of course, whether or not it's related directly to the scandal or not. But we do know that they're making this announcement at this time, which is obviously, you know, strikingly coincidental that Kevin Spacey's series, on which he executive produces, would also be ending its show as all this news comes out. So that's a very swift reaction, as we're seeing in Hollywood, as we saw with Harvey Weinstein. We saw him swiftly lose his job, and then the board vote him out, and we're seeing swift consequences for all of these things, allegations or not.
So another brick in the sexual harassment or sexual assault wall, huh? I mean, I wonder how many more there are out there.
You would have to imagine that there's probably a lot, because this goes on, and not just in Hollywood, in every industry, but in an industry like Hollywood. I'm surprised we haven't heard more from the modeling industry. where this is, you know, reported.
No kidding. Well, is Spacey admitting as much? Because my understanding is he says he doesn't remember the incident if it happened some 30 years ago.
But he didn't deny that it happened. He didn't say that's impossible or, you know, so that silence speaks volumes there. He did say he was, you know, he doesn't remember it, but if it happened, he apologizes and that it would have been a stupid, drunken mistake.
Right.
Along those lines. So, you know, that's not a denial. That's not a Harvey Weinstein, I never did any of this stuff, or a James Toback, the director James Toback, who said, I've never even met any of these women. You know, that's crazy.
And for those of you keeping score at home, the Toback number is around 200. Am I right about that?
Over 300 women allegedly contacted Glenn Whip, who was the guy who wrote the article for the LA Times. Glenn Whip had said as of last Friday, I believe, that over 310 women had contacted him with similar stories.
And Rapp feels empowered now because of all of these other allegations against other people?
I would imagine so. I would imagine a lot of people do. They see that these things are happening and happening with consequences. So all these people who have felt alone, and I think that's one of the biggest things here, is that a lot of these people felt alone. They didn't know they were part of this club of people who were harassed or assaulted, again, allegedly. But they thought they were the only one. Once you realize, oh, there's somebody else, there's 30 other people, there's 300 other people, it empowers you.
I'm getting the feeling that if you had a good relationship with a director or a producer and you were a young, beautiful starlet and he was an older white guy, that would be the exception. It sounds terrible what's going on out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, this is an industry that was built on this with a wink and a nudge, that this was kind of okay, that the idea of the casting couch was a joke. I mean, it was something that was literally funny to people. But when actually taken into the seriousness of what it is, it's a horrible, disgusting thing, and people's lives are ruined because of it.
Jason, Kevin Spacey is being criticized for a number of reasons, among them that he's sort of conflating his coming out, his... Not that it was a big secret, but that he's gay. And by the way, I may have molested this boy. What a bad time to come out, or a way to do it. What are you making of that?
That's what a lot of people are saying, is that, you know, for so many years he's wanted his privacy. Oh, you know, don't ask me about certain things. That's my life. That's my personal life. That's privacy, which is fine. I mean, if that's sure, you're entitled to your privacy. But then the second something like this comes out, oh, no, it's no longer privacy. I'm gay. And to have that in the same statement, people, especially in the gay community, are just appalled by it.
Well, right. And if he's gay, I mean, then he should be sensitive to the fact that deflecting it that way, as though that's an explanation, is the worst possible thing to do in this situation.
One would think he would be sensitive to that. But
yeah.
Everybody says that this is not only... Is it, do the two not have, being, you know, being gay and then these allegations not have anything to do with each other?
Right.
They set the gay rights agenda back, you know, decades of people who have been fighting for years not to have these two things associated, pedophilia and being gay.
Yeah, exactly. I'm reading Billy Eichner's tweet. Kevin Spacey has just invented something that has never existed before, a bad time to come out. Let you and I talk again, Jason. It's always a pleasure to visit with you. I don't do it as often as I'd like. I really appreciate you joining us.
Sure thing. Thank you.
ABC's Jason Nathanson. Rokan Anna DeVlantis in the Allstate Showcase studio. Hi, kids.
We're just discussing, of course, there's a Chicago connection to everything bad in the news these days. And
right. You never take that on the chin again.
Can you believe it?
Cannot even. And that's another reason for Trump to be mad at Chicago, because of George Papadopoulos, or as Wolf Blitzer called him three times today, George Stephanopoulos.
Oh, did no, he did
yes.
not.
Oh, I yes. love that.
I heard Papadopoulos and Poopadis or something.
I called him Poppin' Fresh because I wasn't sure what the end of it was, and I thought, it can't be Dopoulos.
Papadopoulos.
Yeah, is that it? It's Papadopoulos.
Papadopoulos,
right?
Yeah.
There's an OU in there, but that's
Papadopoulos.
Papadopoulos.
Yeah, I mean, Chicagoans, you know, you gotta be able to, you have to be able to pronounce Greek names, you gotta be able to pronounce Polish names.
Serbian, Croatian.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Boy, but you think about that, if he somehow is involved in turning evidence against Donald Trump, he really will hate Chicago, because the two people he hates the most in the world are Hillary and Barack. And that's a Chicago
thing. Now I got a Papadopoulos.
Now we got one from Chicago. Yeah.
And I don't think he's crazy about you either, Mr.
No, he's not.
You talking about Trump?
Yeah.
The president?
Yeah.
I thought you were very complimentary of him when he was on the show. Well, I remember that.
I said I liked his sign. Did you, just trying to warm him up. Did you notice, though, did you think of me immediately when Manafort got indicted?
I did, because you had said a while ago.
A year ago, I said Manafort's going to jail. When the
first information came out about him, you're like, someone's going to jail.
When he left the campaign, it said someone's going to jail, and he's going to be the first one.
Nostradamus, you got any other names for us? You're on a roll. Who's
Mike
next?
Flynn, Jr. and Sr.
Ooh.